Welcome back to Take One. This is your host, Juan Pablo Sá, talking to you from the CITR station at UBC Point Grey campus, located in the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. Today, I have a very special episode for all of you, and that is the case, because I am going to talk about my Oscar nominations. What if I picked the Oscars? What if I was in charge of the Academy Awards and I was the person in charge of nominating people in the different categories of the Academy Awards? That being said, before we start, let's go through some basic ground rules. First of all, I am going, for my nominations, I am only going to be nominating the same number of nominees as the Academy Award. Considering that in Best Picture, the Academy Award nominates 10 films, I am also going to be nominating only 10 films for Best Picture. For all the other categories, the Academy nominates 5 nominees per category. I am going to do the same thing. Then, the second ground rule is I am only going to be including and nominating movies that are credited as being released in 2024. This means that there are some incredible movies that I watched in 2024 that became widely available in 2024 that I unfortunately won't be including. These are movies such as Sing Sing, Strange Darling, His Three Daughters, There's Still Tomorrow, exceptional films, but for the sake of brevity and in order for me to not go insane, I have decided to make it easier on myself and just go with movies that are credited as being released in 2024, either on IMDb or on Letterboxd. And I know that is not how the Academy works. I know that is not how they do it. After all, we did see people from Sing Sing being nominated at this year's Academy Award, but I'm just doing it that way for the sake of brevity. So, considering that, how are we going to do this? How is this going to work? After all, there are 23 different categories of the Academy Awards, and this is only a one-hour show. So, of course, I'm not going to be able to cover every single category. I'm not going to give you my nominations for all of them. I am only going to focus on 9 of these categories. And then, after we go through these 9 categories in detail, I will then give you some hot takes, you know, some picks in 5 other categories, some picks that I think deserve recognition, but I'm just going to go through them real quick, and I'm not going to go through the categories in detail. Now, considering that, It is time we jump right in. And let's begin with our first category, which is also the most important one. And this category is Best Picture. My nominees, the Take One nominees for Best Picture are, at number 1, Dune Part 2. I have talked about this movie enough in this radio show / podcast / YouTube show by now. You guys are probably tired of hearing me talk about how much I love this movie. But yes, I not only think Dune Part 2 was the best movie of 2024, but I also think it is generally one of the best adaptations, one of the best science fiction movies ever made, and just one of the best movies ever made, period. I truly, truly adore that film. What Denis Villeneuve did was incredible. Then, at number 2, my second nominee for Best Picture is The Brutalist. This is a movie, like, you know, when people say they don't do them like they used to, this is what they're talking about. The Brutalist is a movie like they used to do back in the day. It is a monumental epic of grandiose proportions with incredible performances, an absolutely fantastic score, beautiful cinematography, incredible editing, an intermission. I love The Brutalist. Then, my third nominee for Best Picture is Challengers. Challengers was by far the most fun I had in a movie theater in 2024. It wasn't only just the most fun experience, but it was also the most electrifying, where I could just feel my palpitations increasing and increasing as the movie went on. And then in that third act, oh my god, I love that movie. Then, my fourth nominee for Best Picture is Wicked. You know, I'm on record in this show talking about how much I love Wicked, both the musical and now this movie. I not only think it is one of the best Broadway adaptations I've ever seen, but I genuinely think is one of the rare Broadway adaptations that manages to even surpass the original source material and somehow manages to even be better than the original source material. That is insane for me to think, because I love the original show. I think the original show is absolutely incredible, but somehow Wicked managed to even surpass it. Then my fifth nominee for Best Picture is I'm Still Here, an incredibly poignant movie from Walter Salles, a movie that was perfectly able to capture a time period in a specific place, you know, Brazil in the early 1970s. Watching this movie, you feel like you're transported to this time period. You feel like you're put in the shoes of these characters that are going through a horrible situation. This was one of the most powerful, heart-wrenching films that I saw in the entirety of 2024. Then my sixth nominee for Best Picture is the documentary No Other Land. I not only think this is one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, it is one of the most harrowing and hard-to-watch pieces of media that I've seen, period, ever. And not only that, but I also think generally, when we're talking about the socio-political state of the world, I generally think No Other Land is probably the most important movie that came out in 2024. I absolutely adored this film. Then my seventh nominee for Best Picture is I Saw the TV Glow. This was a movie that really surprised me. Once again, Jane Schoenbrunn. When I was watching that film, it just felt like this director that they just kicked down the door and asserted themselves as one of the new voices in Hollywood that are worth keeping an eye on. And I was blown away by this film. It, truly, truly fantastic and truly unique. Then my eighth nominee for Best Picture is none other than Ghostlight, one of the most subtle but equally poignant films that I saw in the entire year, with some exceptional performances, a script that slowly peeled away layer after layer in order for audience members to be able to discover a mystery in its core, you know, the mystery of what actually happened, what traumatic event is bringing all of these people together. I love Ghostlight. Then my ninth nominee for Best Picture is The Substance, which was one of the most bonkers films that I've ever seen. Absolutely insane. And in truly incredible third act of unprecedented proportions. So much blood, so much gore, so much incredible body horror. Also, some pretty deep commentary about, you know, the beauty industry, about Hollywood, about the banality of fame. Incredible film. I love The Substance. And then, at number 10, my last nominee for Best Picture is Anora. Not only do I think this is Sean Baker's best film, I also thought it was an incredibly funny and an incredibly electrifying experience. I was blown away by how this film was able to reinvent itself two times throughout the film. You know, once at the end of the first act, when the movie goes from being a hyper-stylized electrifying comedy into becoming a super stressful home invasion film, and then it reinvents itself once again at the end of the second act, when it goes from being a very stressful home invasion film into becoming a truly depressive, introspective character study. Amazing film. Incredible performances. So yeah, those would be my 10 nominees for Best Picture. If I, Juan Pablo Sa, if Take One was in charge of the nominations, this would be my nominees. Now, just so you guys have some context, this list of nominees, I currently have 6 out of 10 in common with the Academy Awards. This 6 out of 10 being Dune Part 2, The Brutalist, Wicked, I'm Still Here, The Substance, and Anora. Of course, the Oscars went with Anora and crowned Anora as the Best Picture winner from, you know, last year, from 2024. Me personally, I would give the crown to, of course, Dune Part 2. One of the best movies I've ever seen. Now, moving on, let's go to the next category, which is directing. My nominees for Best Directing are, my first nominee is Denis Villeneuve for Dune Part 2, of course. My second nominee is Coralie Farge for The Substance. My third nominee is Luca Guadagnino, who just flexed all over us in Challengers. My fourth nominee is Brady Corbett for The Brutalist. And then my fifth nominee is Jane Schoenbrunn for I Saw the TV Glow. Now, In this category, I have 2 out of 5 in common with the Academy Awards. Those 2 in common being Coralie Farjay and Brady Corbett. And of course, the Oscars gave their award to Sean Baker for directing Anora, who is someone that I didn't even nominate. To be fair, making this category was extremely difficult, but Sean Baker didn't actually make it into my top 5 nominees for Best Director. That is not because I hate Anora. I actually love the film, as you just heard me talk about it. That is not because I hate Sean Baker. I think the guy is extremely, extremely talented. I just didn't nominate him because, in my opinion, I love what he did in Anora, but I've seen him do exceptional work in some of his previous films in, The Florida Project and Red Rocket. And, I feel like there were other candidates, other directors that impressed me enough more with what they brought to the table and how much they transformed and changed and grew as filmmakers. Still, Sean Baker, no shade. Incredible, incredible work. Now, out of my nominees, I would give Best Director, and the winner of Best Director, in my opinion, out of my nominees, would without a doubt be Denis Villeneuve for directing Dune Part 2. And the fact that he wasn't even nominated in the first place at the Academy Awards just completely blows my mind. The fact that he wasn't nominated for Dune Part 2 or Dune Part 1, insane. Truly, truly insane. I genuinely believe that just the scene where Paul Atreides rides the sandworm, just that scene alone, in and of itself, should be enough to get Denis Villeneuve the win. Not just the nomination, but the win. And if you want to look elsewhere, yes, you have the scene of Paul Atreides riding the sandworm. You have the incredible black and white monochromatic gladiator arena scene with Fade Rautha. You have the amazing eclipse scene that is, how the movie begins. The final confrontation in between Fade Rautha and Paul Atreides. The scene of Paul addressing, the Council of Fremen and talking to them. Oh my God, this film was just filled with so many moments that were so incredibly directed. I can't believe Denis Villeneuve didn't get nominated. I would give him the win. Now, moving on, my third category, the third category that I will be covering, is actually actor in a leading role. Now, for actor in a leading role, my first nominee is Adrien Brody for The Brutalist. My second nominee is Keith Kupferer for Ghostlight. My third nominee is Abu Sangare for Suleiman's Story. My fourth nominee is Sebastian Stan for The Apprentice. And my fifth nominee is, believe it or not, also Sebastian Stan for The Apprentice. This guy just had one of the most insane years in film history. I can't believe he just churned out 2 of the best performances of the year, in the exact same year. Now, in this category, I have 2 nominees in common with the Oscars, these 2 nominees being Adrien Brody and Sebastian Stan for The Apprentice, not for a different man. And of course, the Oscars went with Adrien Brody. They gave the award to Adrien Brody. And in my opinion, I agree. If I were to name a victor, if I were to give an award, if I were to name a winner out of this category, I would also give it to Adrien Brody in The Brutalist. I thought he did a truly, truly an exceptional job. That whole movie just rests on his shoulders, and he absolutely killed it. Then, moving on, in actress in a leading role, my 5 nominees would be. My first nominee would be Cynthia Erivo for Wicked. My second nominee would be Fernanda Torres for I'm Still Here, which, oh my God, what an incredible performance. My third nominee would be Naomi Scott for Smile 2, which, sure, it's not the best movie of the year. It wasn't even in my top 24 movies of the year. I mean, you guys saw that video a couple of weeks ago. But her performance was truly, truly exceptional. Then my 4th nominee would be Nell Tiger-Free for The First Omen. This was another movie that I thought it was great. I very much enjoyed it. It didn't make it into my top 24 movies of the year. But even though the movie wasn't one of the best films of the year, her performance was just so, so insanely good. And, you know, I know the Academy Awards, for the longest time, they've had this bias against horror or genre-y performances. There are so many incredible horror performances from previous years that deserved an Oscar nomination or an Oscar win and didn't even get acknowledged. You know, I'm talking about Toni Collette in Hereditary. I'm talking about Lupita Nyong'o in Us. These are generally some of the best performances I've seen in my entire life, and they were completely ignored. So in this show, where I am picking my nominees, I am trying to make sure that I don't do the same mistake that the Oscars did, and I am actually going to look into genre content for my nominations, and that is why you see nominees such as Naomi Scott from Smile 2 and Nell Tigerfree from The First Omen as two of my nominees. And then, finally, at number 5, my 5th nominee is Mikey Madison for Anora. Incredible performance. What can I say? Now, in this category, I have 3 out of 5 in common with the Academy Awards. This 3 out of 5 being, of course, Cynthia Erivo, Fernanda Torres, and Mikey Madison. And the Oscars, their winner, you know, the winner that they picked was Mikey Madison for Anora. Me personally, I would give the award to actress in a leading role. My pick would actually be Cynthia Erivo in Wicked. I thought what Cynthia Erivo did in that movie was nothing short of exceptional. You know, this is a role that was popularized by Idina Menzel such a long time ago. And every time that anyone thought about Elphaba, you know, in Wicked, every time that anyone thought about Elphaba, that name was just synonymous with Idina Menzel. It was impossible to separate the two of them, you know, in my opinion, subjectively speaking, I guess. But somehow, Cynthia Erivo arrived and did the impossible by making Elphaba her own. She was able to make Elphaba her own character. She was able to bring her own unique new spin into the character while remaining faithful to the source material and to the character that we all know and love. And Cynthia Erivo just blew me away in so many ways, both with her performance, with her line delivery, with her dialogue, with her physicality, her expressions. And not only that, but oh my God, her singing. Jesus Christ. Cynthia Erivo's rendition of The Wizard and I is just absolutely chilling. And of course, defying gravity. Oh my God. The last 15 minutes of the movie just rest entirely in Cynthia Erivo's shoulders. Of course, Ariana Grande is there and, you know, there's other actors, but the last 15 minutes of the movie is just a Cynthia Erivo tour de force, and she brought that home. She brought the house down. Incredible. And the fact that, you know, from seeing behind the scenes videos, the fact that she was singing and dancing while she was acting and performing, while she was hanging from harnesses, while she was flying and spinning and doing all of this crazy stunts is insane. So Cynthia, generally, kudos to you. Extremely well deserved. If it was up to me, I would have given you the award for actress in a leading role. Now, we still have 5 more categories to discuss, but before we do so, let's jump into a little break. And here we go.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM,
Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Scatulia, Talitin, Homasque Mustail. Devon Cole is a woman in total control. Unafraid and unashamed, Cole has burst onto the scene through her expertly crafted feminist pop anthems, packaging social truths into repeat worthy bops. This is the era of fempop. And Devon Cole is an artist you don't want to miss. Join Devon Cole on her Two Shades Blonder tour and see her in Vancouver at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 16th. To find out more and get your tickets, visit admitone.com. That's admitone.com. I should be swimming, but I'm a fiend for the troublesome boy who's driving me wild.
Attention, all artists, zine makers, writers, musicians, community organizers, activists, anarchists, proles, punks, and weirdos. Are you screaming for your voice to be heard? Do you resist capitalism and colonialism? Are you angry about the current political climate and ready to act up about it? Well, we want you here. The second annual Anarchist Book Fair is now looking for creatives, creators, activists, and organizations who engage in community building, mutual aid, active resistance, skill building, and knowledge sharing to table booths and propose workshops. This is an anarchist space, which means it opposes hierarchies and seeks to amplify unheard voices and build communities of mutual aid and support. First come, first serve. 50% of tables reserved for marginalized voices. Email sponsorship@citr.ca before March 27th. sponsorship@citr.ca. sponsorship@citr.ca.
You're listening to
CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Ice cream man, can I have this? I want this over here, and a toast on by my father, and give me this ice over here, and vanilla cone. Thank you, ice cream man. Thank you, ice cream man.
We Outside presents Lost in Paradise, featuring Sam Wallace performing at the Cobalt Cabaret on March 14th at 6 p.m. Head to showpass.com and look up We Outside to grab your tickets today. Are you interested in radio? Do you want to start your own show but you don't know where to get started? Make your radio dreams come true by joining a collective. From the news collective, the arts collective, the music collective, the sports collective, the accessibility collective, the indigenous collective, and the intersectionality collective, there's something for everyone. And we provide free technical training to get started. Explore these worlds virtually and in person, and be prepared to make fun friends. For more information, visit citr.ca/get involved.
Welcome back to Take One. This is your host, Juan Pablo Sá, talking to you from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Okay, I hope you all enjoyed that break. We are in the middle of me talking about my nominees for the Academy Awards. If I was in charge of selecting the nominees for 2024's, you know, the movies that came out in 2024, the Academy Awards for that year, this would be my nominees. I just talked through my nominees for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor in a Leading Role, and Best Actress in a Leading Role. Now it is time to move on to the next five categories that I will be covering. So, moving on, my nominees for Lead Actor in a Supporting Role, my nominees would be at number one, Jeremy Strong for The Apprentice. My second nominee would be Guy Pearce for The Brutalist. My third nominee would be Mark Edelstein for Anora. My fourth nominee would be Yura Borisov for Anora. And my fifth nominee would be Austin Butler, who was completely unrecognizable as Fade Rautha in Dune Part 2. Oh my god, that was a huge 180-degree turn from going to playing Elvis Presley in the Elvis biopic to playing this bold serial killer with a raspy voice, this Harkonnen soldier in Dune Part 2. Now, those are my five nominees. Out of those five nominees, I have three out of five in common with the Oscars. Those three out of five would be Jeremy Strong for The Apprentice, Guy Pearce for The Brutalist, and Yura Borisov for Anora. And of course, the Academy Awards, they gave the big prize. They gave, you know, the Oscar for actor in a supporting role to Kieran Culkin for A Real Pain, which is someone that I didn't even nominate in my five nominees. That is not because I hate Kieran Culkin. That is not because I hate the movie. I actually very much enjoyed A Real Pain, and I thought Kieran Culkin's performance in A Real Pain was great. The only reason why I didn't personally nominate it as one of my five nominees is because, in my opinion, there are stronger competitors. This was a very strong year. And also, I feel like after seeing Kieran Culkin at the red carpet, after seeing him in award shows, after seeing behind the scenes from him, and after seeing his performance in Succession, I feel like the character that he plays in A Real Pain felt more like a variation of Roman Roy than a brand new character, than a brand new transformative role that he's taking on. It also felt very similar to the persona of Kieran Culkin that we got to see in the red carpet. So I don't know how much of that was acting. I don't know how much of that just came naturally to him. But in my opinion, these five performances were more transformative, as I mentioned. Now, out of my five nominees, if I were to name a victor, if I were to give the award to someone, I would actually give it to Jeremy Strong in The Apprentice. You know, speaking of Succession, I would give it to another Succession boy, to another Roy brother, but this time to Kendall, to Jeremy Strong for The Apprentice. I thought Jeremy Strong did an incredible job. The Apprentice is not an easy movie. Is a movie that, you know, 9 times out of 10 could have ended up horribly. You know, for those of you who don't know, The Apprentice, we're talking, of course, about the Donald Trump biopic that came out last year. And yes, this is an extremely tricky movie to make because in every step of the way, this movie could easily end up feeling like caricature. It could easily end up feeling like an SNL sketch where people are just exaggerating their mannerisms and making their best Donald Trump impressions in order to be funny and in order to be chaotic and in order to elicit a laugh. But that is not what this movie was. These actors, Sebastian Stan and Jeremy Strong, played the characters of Donald Trump and Roy Cohen with the utmost respect, with the utmost gravitas and nuance, and while doing a job that could have so easily ended up so badly, they absolutely excelled. So in my opinion, Jeremy Strong's performance as Roy Cohen deserves the win. It not only did the impossible by being able to some extent, humanize Roy Cohen, but, you know, he allowed us to see facets of this person that we've never even heard about. He was incredibly frightening, incredibly intimidating, but also he felt extremely real. So that would be my pick for the actor in a supporting role winner. Now, moving on, the next category I will be talking about is actress in a supporting role. My nominees for actress in a supporting role are, my first nominee is Ariana Grande for Wicked, which, you know, I've talked already about this performance in previous episodes. She just absolutely blew me away. I came into this movie with no expectations from her. I've never been a huge Ariana Grande fan, you know, nothing against her, but I've just never been a fan. And I never knew what she was capable of. So when I saw her in this film, just hamming up the screen, just chewing scenery, just going crazy in that popular number, it blew me away. My second nominee would be Zoe Saldana in Emilia Perez, a role that wasn't easy, a role with some huge dance numbers, some incredibly challenging singing, rapping musical numbers, a lot of acting, both in English and in Spanish, a lot of emotional depth, and Zoe Saldana kicked it out of the park. At number three, my third nominee would be Margaret Qualley for The Substance, which, I mean, come on. Margaret Qualley as a younger, substantified version of Demi Moore just, you know, kicked it out of the park. Truly incredible. My fourth nominee would be Felicity Jones for The Brutalist, which, you know, for those of you guys who have seen The Brutalist, you know, there's one scene where Felicity Jones confronts Guy Pearce's character, and for that scene alone, in and of itself, she definitely deserves a recognition. And then my fifth and final nominee would be Rebecca Ferguson, also for Dune Part 2. You know, just like Austin Butler in the previous category, this time I'm nominating Rebecca Ferguson. I thought she, you know, I love Rebecca Ferguson. I think she's exceptional in all of her films. But in Dune Part 2, we just saw her walk this very fine line in between this motherly figure who still wants the best for her children, and then this extremely intimidating and extremely scary character with huge powers that acts as, you know, the puppet master behind the scenes, pulling all the strings and making sure that everything goes according to her plan. Exceptional performance. Now, in this category, I have 3 out of 5 in common with the Oscars, those three being Ariana Grande in Wicked, Zoe Saldana in Emilia Perez, and Felicity Jones in The Brutalist. And, of course, the Oscars gave the big prize to Zoe Saldana in Emilia Perez. And, you know, as I mentioned, I thought her performance was great. That's one of the reasons why I've nominated her. But me, personally, if I were to pick a winner, I would give it to Mrs. Ariana Grande. I thought that performance just completely blew me away. I still remember sitting down for Wicked the very first time that I saw it, and then it starts with, you know, the song where everyone is just celebrating the death of the Wicked Witch of the West, and you see very quickly, you see Ariana Grande acting like, you know, like she's happy, like she's celebrating along with the Munchkins the death of this person, but we know that she's actually mourning, that she's actually sad about the death of this person that used to be her friend, that used to be sort of her sister. And all of those nuances are right there in her performance. Underneath the fake smile that she's putting on, you see her eyes watering, you see the tears coming down, you see that inside she's hurting, she's breaking, but she has to keep up the facade of this Glinda the Good Witch who is celebrating along with the people of Oz. And oh my god, that scene, from that point on, I was like, okay, I clearly underestimated this person. And then once again, the popular musical number started, and I was like, yes, this is insane. Ariana Grande being a land shark, just, you know, being a little sandworm on the ground dancing next to Cynthia Erivo was crazy. Her expressions, her physicality, her voice, her nuance, it's insane. Moving on, the next category that I want to talk about is original screenplay. My nominees for best original screenplays, are Challengers, then Ghostlight, then Memoir of a Snail, then my fourth nominee would be The Brutalist, and my fifth and final nominee would be Heretic. For this category, I really try to focus if I just have the screenplay, if we just have the bare bones screenplay for each of these movies, not the editing, not the costumes, not the lighting, not the performances, not the cinematography, if we just get the screenplay with the story, the screen directions, and the dialogue, which piece of writing do I think is the strongest? And I'm really happy with this selection. I genuinely think all five of these candidates could very easily sell this screenplays as books in a bookstore, and they would sell out like warm bread. Memoir of a Snail, considering the title, that's already a memoir. Like, that could very easily already be a book that is sold in bookstores. Heretic, you know, I wasn't the biggest fan of the third act of that movie. I thought the ending deflated a bit, but I think the first half of Heretic is so dialogue heavy and so incredibly appealing, where you don't even want to blink because you're just taking all of this information that Hugh Grant is giving you. That script, that dialogue is just some of the most incredible dialogue that I saw all year. I mean, The Brutalist is an incredibly juicy, philosophically complex screenplay. Challengers, the way that screenplay, you know, messed with time, the way it took us back to the past, then into the present, then into the future, and the way that every single time that we went to the past and came back, every single time that happened, we came into the present with new information that we didn't have before that just completely recontextualized what we've already seen and what we're about to watch. I can't even imagine how difficult it must have been to write that movie, from planning everything out in a chronological order to then deciding when to cut, when to go back, when to put this flashback. Oh my god, truly incredible. And then Ghostlight. I've talked enough about Ghostlight already. I think Ghostlight is one of the most nuanced, but also one of the most poignant films that I saw in the entire year. As I've mentioned before, this is a movie that when the film begins, you know that something happened. You know that there's a traumatic event that is bringing all of these people together in mourning, but you don't really know what actually happened. And as the story goes, as the screenplay moves forward, progressively you start unpeeling layer after layer, and you start getting more and more information until at the very end you get a full picture of what actually took place, and it's just a beautifully written screenplay. Of course, in this movie, the actors are also acting Romeo and Juliet. They are acting a William Shakespeare play. And the way they play, they are acting, the way it parallels the traumatic event that happened in their lives was just a whole other level of great screenwriting that I just have to commend it. In this category, I actually only have 1 out of 5 in common with the Academy Award, and that is The Brutalist. The Oscars gave the award to Anora, which, you know, understandable. They clearly loved Anora. After all, they gave it Best Picture, and I loved Anora. I just personally think, when I think of Anora, when I think of that movie, I think of great directing, I think of incredible editing, lights, some beautiful visuals, some incredible performances. But I think if you just go down to the written piece, if you just go down to the bare minimum, to the bare bones, to the script, you know, I think Anora is heightened by a lot of those other elements that come on board after the screenplay. That is why I personally didn't even nominate it as one of my 5 nominees. Personally, if I were to name a winner in this category, I would give it to Challengers. I think a lot of people underestimate how hard it is to write a screenplay that fun and that electrifying, to keep that pacing, to keep that level of intensity for around 2 hours, and to keep rising the tension more and more and more until that explosive third act is not easy to do. And that's why I would personally give it the win. Now, moving on, the next category that I want to talk about is adapted screenplay. Now, the last category was all about original screenplays. This was all about, you know, new ideas, new screenplays that, you know, started from scratch, from ground zero. This is all about adaptation. This new category is all about taking pre-existing IP, pre-existing intellectual property, and just making a movie out of it, making a screenplay out of it. My first nominee is, of course, Dune Part 2. When I was reading the Frank Herbert books, when I was reading, you know, especially when I was reading the first Dune book, the thought that kept crossing through my mind is, this book is unadaptable. How the hell is someone going to adapt this into a visual medium? There is so much internal monologue. There are so many things that characters think but don't say, because, you know, a big part of Dune is all about self-control and being able to control your emotions. So you have this Bene Gesserits that out in the open, they are like this stoic faces, but deep on the inside, you know that Lady Jessica has this turmoil of emotions that is not being externalized. Not only that, but also there's this crazy powers, like using the voice, that when I was reading that, I was like, how the hell are you going to show that in a visual medium? And not only that, but the way Paul Atreides, the way he sees time, is unlike any version of time travel or time visions that we've ever seen before in any other piece of sci-fi media. It's so complex, it's so beautiful, and when I was reading it, I was just like, I don't know. I don't know how anyone is going to adapt that. And Denis Villeneuve just did the impossible. He was able to adapt all of that beautifully with flying colors. I mean, just, he was able to make writing a sandworm cool. And for those of you who have seen the 1984 David Lynch's adaptation of Dune, you know how bad it could have been. But Denis Villeneuve, he didn't only make it cool, he made it freaking epic. So that is one of my nominees. Then my second nominee for Best Adapted Screenplay is I'm Still Here, you know, the incredible Brazilian movie that we've been talking about. This film did truly a fantastic job at putting you in the shoes of these characters that are going through an insurmountable, incredibly tragic situation. Not only that, but this movie does an incredible job at putting you in this time and place, you know, putting you in Brazil in the early 1970s during a military dictatorship. And the way this script is crafted, I just, you know, I couldn't give it more praise. You know, this film does a great job at getting you invested in the family, getting you invested in the interpersonal relationships before all of these are eventually taken away when, you know, when the tragic event happens. But also everything that we see in this movie, every conversation in between characters, it all feels so organic. It all feels so raw. It feels like real mothers and daughters talking to each other. It doesn't feel like a screenplay written by someone else, given to some actors who are interpreting those lines and are reading what was planned on page. It felt so, so natural. I love this screenplay. Then at number three, we have Conclave, which I am on record in this channel. I've talked about how much I adore the screenplay for Conclave. In my opinion, I think some of the best dialogue that I heard in 2024 came from this movie. The speech where Ralph Fiennes is addressing the Cardinals before Conclave actually begins. And, you know, when he talks to them and has his huge speech about doubt and how doubt is what we need. That, oh my god, I just remember being blown away watching that scene alone. And the whole script has some incredible bits, some incredible conversations, a lot of introspection, beautifully written script. Then, my fourth nominee would be The Apprentice. We've talked about The Apprentice already. Once again, this is a Donald Trump biopic. I can't even imagine how much of an insurmountable task it would be to write a screenplay about Donald Trump's origin. Once again, just like when we were talking about the performances, this could have so easily turned into a caricature. This could have so easily turned into a hit job. It could have so easily turned into a one-dimensional, simple propaganda piece that is just telling one side of the story in a very caricaturesque way. But instead, this movie does the impossible by somehow being able to humanize the monster that is Donald J. Trump. We are familiar with a very public face of Trump, but the Trump that we see in The Apprentice is the Trump before Trump, is the Trump before he became the person that we know. And this movie is able to dig deep into his, you know, his inner turmoil, his inner state, his history with his family, and what led to him becoming into the person that he is. That seems like an impossible task, if you ask me, and they truly did an exceptional job. Also, trying to sum up a life in 1 2-hour movie is never an easy task, and I think this movie did an exceptional job. And then, at number five, my final nominee for adapted screenplay is Kneecap, which Kneecap is, once again, I've talked about this movie before in previous episodes, but for those of you who are not aware, Kneecap is this small, very irreverent movie that is a biopic about the Irish rap band, also by the name of Kneecap, and this movie tells their story and how they became a thing. And I thought this movie, in every single aspect of filmmaking, just completely, perfectly captures the essence of the band. And the script is not the exception. The script is just as angry, energetic, dialing it up to an 11, irreverent. It's everything that the band has been in screenplay format. I love the movie. Now, in this category, I also have 1 out of 5 in common with the Academy Awards, and that is Conclave, for good reason. Of course, the Oscars gave the award to Conclave, which, you know, incredibly well-deserved. But me, personally, I would definitely give the award to Dune Part 2. I think it's becoming clear how much of a Dune Part 2 fan I am. And what can I say? I love the movie, and I think Denis Villeneuve did the impossible. Many of these filmmakers did the impossible by writing this screenplays, but particularly Denis Villeneuve. Now, moving on. The last category that I will be discussing in detail is the category of editing. And at first, I was just going to talk about this category as one of my hot takes, where I was just going to mention the ones that I didn't have in common with the Academy Awards. But then I realized that in this category, I actually have 0 out of 5 in common with the Academy Awards. So I was like, Jesus, okay, I guess I'll talk about this one. My nominees for best editing are, at number 1, Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat. At number 2, Challengers. At number 3, Dune Part 2. At number 4, The Substance. And at number 5, Kneecap. Once again, 0 out of 5 in common with the Academy Awards. The Academy Awards went with Anora, which I can't complain. I love Anora. I think the editing in that movie is incredible. I just feel like these 5 candidates are, in my opinion, stronger. Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat, for those of you who don't know, is one of the most insane pieces of documentary filmmaking that I've ever seen. This is a documentary film made entirely out of archival footage, where people are just grabbing archival footage from everywhere, trying to create a portrait of what happened in 1962. I don't really remember, but they pick 1 year or 2 years, and they just try to show everything that was going on in the world, you know, related mostly to Africa and to coup d'etats. But everything that was going on in that very small time period. And you see everything from political rallies to speeches at the United Nations to musicians performing to travel vlogs to it's just everything. And I can't even imagine how hard it would be to decide to start making this movie. Like, how do you start with over 700 hours of archival footage and to boil that down into 2 hours and 15? Jesus Christ, insane, truly, truly insane. This movie was 100% editing. Everything else already existed. Every single piece of footage that we see in this movie was already made. It already existed. So without editing, this movie wouldn't even be a thing. That is why I nominated it. And then Challengers, you know, we've talked enough about Challengers already, about the rhythmic editing, about how they use it to create tension, to, you know, rise it all up and make it more and more intense as the movie progresses. Then Dune Part 2, you know, just the scene of Timothée Chalamet riding the sandworm has some of the best editing I've ever seen. Then we have The Substance, which has some incredibly creative, just unusual editing to accentuate the craziness of what we're seeing on screen. And then Kneecap, which has some of the most and some of the most frequent and hyperactive editing that I saw all year. Once again, a great representation of what the band's music is actually like. The Oscars gave it to Anora, as I mentioned, but me personally, I would give it to Soundtrack to a Coup d'Etat. As I mentioned, incredible, incredible job. Now, after this short break, I am going to talk about my hot takes in, you know, five categories. Five small hot takes, films that I think deserve nominations. But once again, before we do so, let's go into a quick musical break.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam,
Nisiaya, and the Sakhulia, Talitin, Homosque Mustail. Devon Cole is a woman in total control. Unafraid and unashamed, Cole has burst onto the scene through her expertly crafted feminist pop anthems, packaging social truths into repeat worthy bops. This is the era of fempop. And Devon Cole is an artist you don't want to miss. Join Devon Cole on her Two Shades Blonder tour and see her in Vancouver at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 16th. To find out more and get your tickets, visit admitone.com. That's admitone.com. I should be smitten, but I'm a fiend for the troublesome boy.
Attention, all artists, zine makers, writers, musicians, community organizers, activists, anarchists, proles, punks, and weirdos. Are you screaming for your voice to be heard? Do you resist capitalism and colonialism? Are you angry about the current political climate and ready to act up about it? Well, we want you here. The second annual Anarchist Book Fair is now looking for creatives, creators, activists, and organizations who engage in community building, mutual aid, active resistance, skill building, and knowledge sharing to table booths and propose workshops. This is an anarchist space, which means it opposes hierarchies and seeks to amplify unheard voices and build communities of mutual aid and support. First come, first serve. 50% of tables reserved for marginalized voices. Email sponsorship@citr.ca before March 27th. sponsorship at citr.ca. sponsorship at citr.ca.
Welcome back to Take One. This is your host, Juan Pablo Sá, talking to you from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Okay, I hope you all enjoyed that short little ad break. For those of you who haven't been listening, I am currently doing an episode of If I Was in Charge of the Academy Awards, Who Would I Have Nominated for 9 out of the 23 categories? I am not covering all categories because that would be insane and that would take way too much time. So I'm just doing 9 and I just finished doing that. And then now I am about to jump into some hot takes. So now it is time for some hot takes, some Take One hot takes, if you will. So for this hot takes, I'm going to be talking about 5 different categories. I am not going to go in detail through every single movie that I would nominate for each of these categories. I'm just going to highlight a couple of hot takes, movies that weren't recognized by the Academy Award that I think deserve it. The first category that I have some hot takes on is cinematography, best cinematography. My first hot take is, oh my god, Challengers definitely deserved a nomination. If you've seen Challengers, if you've seen the ending of that movie, you saw when the camera just turned into a tennis ball. You saw when the camera went underground, under the floor, and we saw the tennis match from beneath. Just by that alone, I thought this movie just deserved to be in here. And the fact that it wasn't even, that it was just completely ignored throughout award season was just very, very sad. And then the second movie that I would like to highlight is actually The Girl with the Needle. This was one of the movies that I saw during last year's Vancouver International Film Festival. I don't know if you guys remember. I talked about it in a previous episode. But this is one of the most disturbing films that I saw last year. Definitely not a good time. Definitely not a fun time. But it is an incredible black and white period piece with some of the most gorgeous, stunning, and haunting black and white cinematography that I saw. A lot of it reminded me of German Expressionist movies, similar to The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. I guess that would be a good comparison. I thought the cinematography in this film was just genuinely exceptional, and I think it deserved a nomination. Then, the next category that I have a Take One hot take on is production design. Now, for production design, I think, first of all, I think The Substance definitely deserved a nomination. I think it's insane it didn't get nominated. I think the way that film used incredibly vibrant colors in the walls, in the ceiling, in the carpet, in everywhere to just accentuate the emotions and heightened this weird, surreal vibe that the movie was going for. I thought all of that was insane. And then not only that, but, you know, the production design of The Substance also includes the billboards that we see in the background, you know, the advertisements that we see, advertising the new show and promoting the new shows. And I thought all of those just really helped buy this world. It really helped sell this world that the movie was trying to create. The movie that we see in The Substance is not real world. It's not the real life. It is this weird, surrealist heightened reality. I mean, an example of that is when Margaret Qualley's character takes over the show that used to be Denis Moore. We see billboards with her face advertising the new show, but they don't even say the name of the show. They don't even say the channel where to watch it. They don't even say what time to watch it. It just says new show, and then you have Margaret Qualley's face all over it. Once again, that is the sort of heightened reality that we are living in, and that heightened reality is completely transmitted through the production design. Also, this movie, The Substance, had so many visual references to David Lynch, Stanley Kubrick, Cronenberg, and so many of those references are conveyed through sets. So I think for that alone, The Substance deserved a nomination. And then in production design, I also think Furiosa, a Mad Max saga, you know, Furiosa, the Mad Max Fury Road prequel, definitely deserved a nomination. And now, mind you, you could say I'm biased because after all, I did interview Colin Gibson, the production designer for Furiosa and Mad Max Fury Road. And, you know, I spoke to him one-to-one and I could hear from him from firsthand all the incredible job that he did. But I honestly think even before interviewing him, I thought for sure this movie deserved a nomination. You know, for many of the movies that we saw last year with incredible production design, like, you know, for instance, Conclave, amazing production design, but yes, they are recreating the Vatican. But, you know, the Vatican is a place that exists. There's reference pictures, there's reference images, there's maps that you can look up if you want to recreate certain spots of the Vatican. But in Mad Max Fury Road and Furiosa Mad Max Saga, you are genuinely creating a world from scratch. There are no reference pictures. Everything that you create in Furiosa, the only point of reference that you have is your previous creations that you also created for Fury Road. So the what Colin Gibson did is incredible. And the attention to detail in every single car, every single motorcycle, every harpoon, every steering wheel, I was blown away. And after talking to him, it truly cemented it in my mind that, yeah, this guy deserved a nomination. Then, moving on, I have some hot takes in costume design. Speaking of Furiosa, I also think Furiosa deserved a nomination in Best Costume Design. I think the costumes in that film are incredible, are unlike anything we've seen before, and that is by design. They are so post-apocalyptic and weird, and it truly feels like, yeah, this is the clothes that people wear, it would wear if society went to shit and we all built up a new society that is all surrounding cars and vehicles and petroleum and oil, and we went back to feudalism in a way with Immortan Joe. So yeah, Furiosa deserved it. And then my big hot take, one that I haven't heard anyone talking about this movie when it comes to production, to costume design, is Parthenope. That is the newest film from Paolo Sorrentino, Italian filmmaker Paolo Sorrentino. I hadn't seen a single movie of his after watching Parthenope, and I was blown away by this film. Not only did I think it was extremely beautiful, but the costumes. Oh my God. I mean, this is a movie that is all about youth. It is all about beauty. It is all about, you know, and enjoying what you have, enjoying the present while you still have it, while you still can. And a lot of that, a lot of that beauty in the backgrounds, in the beautiful Italian backdrops, and also in the people, in the actors on screen, that beauty is accentuated by some of the most sensual, sexual, sumptuous, and beautiful costumes that I saw all year. Every single bikini, every single cloth was perfectly placed. And not only that, but for those of you who have seen Parthenope, there is one scene where the main character, Parthenope, when she wears this jeweled dress that is inspired by the religious relics of the treasure of San Gennaro, just that piece of costuming alone, the intricateness of the jewels, of the golden pieces, of the crosses, just that costume piece alone, I think deserves, is more than worthy of a nomination. It blew me away. And I can't believe this movie got so, so ignored. Anyway, then the next category that I have some hot takes on is animated feature. My first hot take is I think Transformers 1 not only deserved a nomination, but deserved to win. And as someone who used to be a huge Transformers hater, I am shocked that I am saying this, but this movie just completely blew me away. You guys know what I'm talking about. I talked about this movie already way too much in my video on my top 24 movies of 2024. It was insane. I came into this film thinking I was going to hate it, and I left an absolute fan, believing every single word that Optimus Prime was saying. Holy shit, this movie was great. And the fact that it just completely got ignored throughout the entirety of award season, just it made me sad. And then another movie that also got ignored and is extremely beautiful was Look Back, you know, the Japanese anime Look Back. Oh my God, that movie was gorgeous. It is not only, you know, this beautiful piece about two friends coming together and growing apart and then coming back together and the life that could have been if they would have taken different decisions, but it is also this great movie about artists and their passion and putting everything into a piece of content and putting a part of yourself, a part of your soul into this art piece. Extremely worthy of a nomination, at the very least. And then last but not the least, the last category that I have some hot takes on is the documentary feature category. I think Will and Harper deserved a nomination. I thought that was a great, extremely funny, extremely poignant and powerful documentary. But the main hot take that I have, and the biggest hot take that I have in this category, is Superman, the Christopher Reeve story. How was this documentary ignored? how was this documentary not nominated for Best Documentary? It made me cry. It blew me away. Out of all the documentaries that I've ever seen in my life, focusing on the life of this one person, the life of this one famous person, I think Superman, the Christopher Reeve story, is probably the best one I've ever seen. It truly showed us a peek behind the curtain of this guy, this person that played Superman, that played this extremely strong, this man of steel, this god amongst men. And it showed us the person, the fragile, complex person behind this figure who ended up suffering a huge accident and wasn't able to be Superman anymore. You know, he became relegated to a wheelchair, and how that affected his life and how that affected his purpose and what he decided to do with the rest of his days. This documentary was just beautiful. I couldn't recommend it enough, and I can't believe it didn't even get nominated for Best Documentary at the Academy Awards. So yes, that is it for if I was in charge of the Oscars, who would I have nominated? What if I picked the Oscars? Who would have been my picks? That is it for this episode. If you're interested in who I would have picked for every single category out of the 23 categories in the Academy Awards, I believe there might be a link below if you're watching this on YouTube. If not, then go find Take One on YouTube and there's a link there and you'll be able to see who I would have nominated in every single category. But that is it for this week's episode. Thank you all so much for watching. Goodbye.